From KUAR News in Little Rock, this is a look at the weekend news, politics, and more. Coming up,
the governor makes his case for two healthcare-related bills in advance of next week's special session.
After the most expensive judicial races in Arkansas history, legislators debate how judges are selected.
An expansion of the number of charter school seats is approved. We'll talk with representatives of the schools.
For the week ending Friday, April 1st, 2016, this is KUAR's Weekend Review Podcast. I'm Michael Heplin.
I'm Sarah Weitz-Kotichek.
And I'm Chris Hickey.
That's just ahead. Well, we're heading into what's expected to be a busy week with the Arkansas legislature to consider Governor Hutchinson's proposals regarding health care in Arkansas. He has two bills that he wants the legislature to consider. One would allow continuation of the state's Medicaid expansion plan. The other is a managed care proposal that the governor says would shift some Medicaid services to private firms and would also enable the state to cut the waiting list for developmentally disabled in about half in 3 years. There are about 3,000 people on that waiting list. Some, about 125, have been on that list for more than 9 years, waiting to get community and home-based services. But this week, the governor worked to build support in the legislature for his proposals. And on Wednesday, he went before the Medicaid Advisory Council and spoke about his goals for the session.
To continue the coverage of 250,000 Arkansans that have been covered under the previous private option, and to make sure there's not a gap in that coverage and the health and the delivery of health care to those citizens. And that's why I make the case that these two bills are linked together inextricably, and they fit together like a puzzle. And the two bills, one, of course, Arkansas Works, that continues but reforms the Medicaid expansion population to add what I believe are four important criteria, which, as you know, as I've outlined in many occasions, enhances personal responsibility. It encourages employer-based insurance. It enhances physical responsibility. And it also encourages work. So those four themes and reforms are the Arkansas Works legislation that will be for the legislature.
But one contentious item here is the managed care proposal. There are several members of the legislature who have been pushing an alternative program called Diamond Care that they say will limit the growth of the traditional Medicaid program without using managed care companies, except for dental benefits. The governor, though, has said he does not want to consider that, only wants the two proposals that he is pushing to be included in his call for the session, says that as governor, being the one calling this session, he is able to make that determination. However, some lawmakers say they will go ahead and introduce this, and whether or not they can do that will depend. We'll get to that part of it that's in just a second. But first, wanted to play this cut from Governor Hutchinson speaking with reporters outside of that council meeting, explaining why he doesn't support this so-called Diamond Care proposal.
The Diamond Care model would increase the responsibilities of government, increase the risk to government, would not transfer the risk to a managed care organization. And so it would not accomplish the objective that I've outlined, that's a realistic plan in producing a trust fund that would be applied for reducing that waiting list.
And as for what can be discussed on this, the supporters of Diamond Care say that, yes, they do have to address the two bills that the governor has called for to be considered in this session, but by a two-thirds vote, say they can consider other measures, can also stay in session for up to 15 days, and if there are objections, The Senate Rules Committee would decide that. But, Sarah, you on Tuesday covered the Health Care Task Force, the final meeting from them before the session. What did they have to say about what the governor's pushing here?
Yeah, I went to the final meeting of the task force where the Stevens consultants were going over all the different bills with lawmakers, just answering a lot of detailed questions. I spoke with Representative Justin Boyd, who was one of the lawmakers who is behind this Diamond Care proposal, and he said that he's concerned about managed care, that it's not proven to result in cost savings, and that he is in support of Arkansas Works. He's not sure if he would vote for a managed care bill if that was his only choice.
There's not any clear-cut data that shows that managed care will produce the cost savings that we've been shown in the task force. So that doesn't mean it won't produce them, but there is concern that it actually might not, or it could actually cost more.
It seems that the real critical difference is how much the state will be outsourcing control of the contractors that we'll hire to be sort of managing the system. So with the managed care model, it's like hiring a company to come in and create a plan. And then the Diamond Care, there were more incentives and like efficiency goals, but the state seemed to be more at the helm. So that so far is what I can get the sense of the difference, but it seems pretty, in a way, an insider in the weeds kind of thing.
Yeah, it is. But the two, as the governor said, he's really suggesting they need to go together, that they're designed together. And of course, has been saying that the state would have a $100 million budget hole if the Medicaid expansion plan isn't continued. And of course, we have about a quarter of a million people who are on what has been known as the private option. The governor, with his reforms to it, wants to rebrand it as Arkansas Works. But at this point, any real indication, you know, there are at least 9 or 10 senators that have said at this point they don't support it, but there continue to be ongoing discussions.
Well, the speculation I've been hearing is that while Arkansas Works may pass in the special session, the real challenge will be the appropriations bills in the fiscal session, that requires a larger majority. And if the legislation is passed but not funded, it dies, and then we won't have any kind of a private option reform to Arkansas Works, anything expanding Medicaid.
And the suggestion has been that that would completely ripple through state government, with cuts having to be made in all departments, and would impact a lot of people. And I think, too, the governor on Wednesday, the announcement about reducing the backlog of people on this developmentally disabled waiting list, I think he's hoping that will sway some people, because this has been an issue. It's been something that people have said would be expensive to address, but has suggested that there would be the savings from his program. But Sarah, as Boyd told you, he's there some skepticism.
Well, I guess it does help put a human face on one group of people that's depending on this Medicaid expansion and opening, you know, certain aspects of the program that have been clogged up. But I think that the managed care and Diamond Care essentially have the same goal, to make that work in similar ways.
Well, the session is to begin on the 6th, though as we record this on Friday afternoon, the governor's call has not officially been sent out yet. And we'll see. The governor wants it to be a quick session. He's hoping to start the fiscal session of the legislature, is scheduled to begin in about 2 weeks. So he's saying that this session, special session coming up next week, needs to be quick, and that he's been working with lawmakers to have the bills crafted and have everything ready to go. But as I said, if lawmakers, enough of them backed it, they could continue this session for up to 15 days. Well, another key item this week involving lawmakers was the state Supreme Court justices, as well as appeals court justices. And Chris, you covered a Senate Judiciary Committee that considered how judges are put in office. Right now they're elected, but we just saw this incredibly expensive race for two positions to the Supreme Court, a lot of outside so-called dark money. Doesn't sound like there was much consensus reached during the meeting.
Yeah, right. The Senate Judiciary met for more than 3 hours, and it was a meeting packed with lawyers and judges. And as you said, it all stems back from this March 1st election for two state Supreme Court justices, in which an estimated more than $1.3 million were spent in ads for the campaigns, including more than $600,000 from this outside nonprofit called the Judicial Crisis Network, which does not have to disclose its donors. And basically, the committee contended with two basic questions, which was, should we elect judges in the first place? Is this the proper system? And if we do elect judges, what rules should be in place for them to finance their campaigns? What rules should regulate those campaigns? The committee, first of all, heard from Associate Justice on the Supreme Court, Karen Baker, and she kind of commented on this this fact that a lot of lawyers in Arkansas do already contribute to the campaigns of Supreme Court justices, and it may create the appearance of some impropriety, although it is certainly allowed in the rules, but it does complicate the rules for recusal in a lot of cases. She proposed an idea which states that all lawyers in Arkansas be required to pay an extra fee to go to publicly financed campaigns of appellate judges and as a way of leveling the playing field, so to speak. Lawyers already have a $200 license fee. She proposed maybe a $150 license fee that would go into this fund that would give money to all appellate judge races.
In states that have attempted things like that, it has been fairly successful, and most candidates have availed themselves of that method of financing a campaign. Lawyers may not like to hear about paying more money, but the truth is you could consider it a user fee that nobody benefits more than the bar from having not only an impartial judge, but having the appearance and the public confidence that they have an impartial judiciary.
Now, there didn't really seem to be a lot of support behind this proposal. Many of the legislators present just simply commented that this wouldn't really create a lot of money to finance a campaign. Now, another point of this discussion was a bill by Democratic Representative Clark Tucker, which had failed in the last regular session, which would require so-called dark money groups like the Judicial Crisis Network, for instance, that don't have to disclose their donors, but who regularly participate in quote-unquote electioneering activities, which basically means influencing an election through ads. It would require them to reveal their donors.
And when it comes to disclosure of who pays for dark money political advertising in our state, what's at stake, in my opinion, is the integrity of our democracy. It's an extremely important issue, and because it affects the process of elections, and I'm talking about all political elections, state elections, not just necessarily judicial elections, but when it affects that process, then it affects every issue of public policy. And so that's why it's so important. And what I'm proposing to do is to shed some light on it.
Now, Tucker's bill did get some pushback from a couple of groups that presented, like Americans for Prosperity Arkansas. They had a couple of representatives there saying that basically it's a right for their donors to be private, and they basically participate in sending out mailers and doing ads and stuff. They wanted their donors to remain private and not be considered or under this bill. The second point about appointing rather than electing judges, this is where there's a lot of disagreement. State Senator Jeremy Hutchinson, who chairs the Senate Judiciary Committee, had expressed that he was wanting to go forward with an election, an appointment system, which would basically require a constitutional amendment on the ballot, which would mean if the legislature were to approve it, would require a 3/4 vote for the from the legislature to put it on a general election ballot for people to consider. But Republican Terry Rice, who was present, kind of disagreed that this appointment system would be better than an election. He thought a potential appointment system could be subject to cronyism or favoritism on the part of elected officials who actually would do the appointing.
We're talking about a body of trained, skilled legal people, lawyers, trial lawyers, judges, judicial people. That is the circle. It's outside my circle, but that's the circle. And how do you keep from contaminating the process, intended or unintended, with just relationships?
But as I mentioned, State Senator Jeremy Hutchinson, he disagrees with this idea that an election system is better. He basically said the public could potentially be more involved under an appointment system because potential appointments would be up for debate when we elect the people who do the appointing, namely probably a governor.
First of all, there's an election to elect a chief executive. And that now part of that election would be who you're going to appoint. What kind of judges do you like? What's your, do you have litmus tests? What are the cases that you, I think just like we see in the presidential election, far more engagement on judicial issues in the presidential election than we've ever had for a court election. And so I think I just disagree with you that that reduces the level of engagement. I think it actually increases it. And then, sure, if you're nominating a judge, you're going to have a limited pool of lawyers, presumably, just like the president has a pool to choose from of typically already sitting judges. But the discussion is not limiting at all, and the accountability is not limiting at all. It's, in my opinion, even more expansive and more robust than judges who you don't know what they're going to do because they can't talk about it, and you don't know anything about them except what you may see in unreported money or their name or who may be on their host list at fundraisers.
Hutchinson raises the point that judges who run in elections can't really talk about cases or how they would decide, so it's really hard to get a sense of a judge's judicial philosophy. We'll say, though, that Hutchinson's uncle, our governor, Asa Hutchinson, has expressed support for a potential appointment system or constitutional amendment. But I guess the main takeaway from this committee meeting, as you mentioned, there's really no consensus around any particular proposal.
Yeah, if lawmakers wanted to, they could add this to one of the sessions coming up, but doesn't sound like that's likely to happen.
Yeah, there was some talk that maybe they would try to fit it in an appointment constitutional amendment in one of the special sessions coming up so that they could potentially get it on this year's November general election ballot, but the timeline doesn't seem likely. I mean, there was also a comment, Eddie Walker, who's the head of the Arkansas Bar Association, also spoke at this committee hearing, and he basically said his organization has a task force going to consider this question, and they want to be able to complete that process and issue a recommendation to legislators before they really, take this to voters or take it up in a session.
And then the following day, on Thursday, we had word that the Arkansas Supreme Court has formed a committee to study judicial election reforms. And that committee will include several justices on the court, Karen Baker, Courtney Goodson, Joe Hart, Rhonda Wood, and Robin Wynn. Any indication? Do we know? It seems a little odd, the high court taking this on themselves to study the issue when they're so directly involved.
Yeah, it's difficult, and a lot of people have noted that, you know, the Chief Justice Howard Brill is not a part of that group, and the retiring Justice Paul Danielson is not a part of that group. It does seem odd, but I mean, I think they're essentially just trying to maintain some relevancy or have some voice. Usually that role belongs to the Chief Justice. Our Chief Justice-elect, Dan Kemp, is not a part of that group, and he'll potentially be a part of, you know, major decisions on the court. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what comes out of that.
Okay, well, finally, we had the Arkansas State Board of Education late Thursday night approve an expansion of charter schools. 3,000 students, Sarah, at ESTEM and LISA Academy in Little Rock. You spoke with representatives of those schools heading into this. Why was this needed, and what are the real issues at play here?
I spoke with John Bacon, who's the head of ESTEM, and ESTEM wants to create a partnership, which they will now, with University of Arkansas at Little Rock to start a high school here. And that would be a different type of program than already exists in the state. They also want to expand their lower level offerings by building a new K through 9 school east of downtown. And LISA also wants to build a new school for that age range. So they want to draw on families that might be leaving the district and create this alternative high school. The goal of charters is to experiment and try new models of in the education system. The Little Rock School District representatives, including Superintendent Baker Curris and former board president Greg Adams, who I spoke with, their concern, and this was a highly controversial vote, their concern was that having those 3,000 or so students over the next decade leave the Little Rock School District would potentially be very damaging to the district and the other 20 or so thousand kids that will remain there.
And this is John Bacon here?
Yeah.
All of the demographics of this community are reflected almost perfectly in the population of the ESTEM schools. Unfortunately, over the years, the Little Rock School District schools have not reflected the entirety of the community. We have so many families that have left to go to private schools. We have so many families choosing homeschools.
One of the arguments that Greg Adams and Curris had made is that the charter schools tend to attract more affluent, higher-achieving students, and that some of the other students in the district can't go to those schools either because they don't provide transportation, or maybe some of the students have special needs, and the charter schools don't have the same programs for learning disabled students. So beyond that, the performance among kids just tends to fall mostly along economic lines is the biggest indicator of performance. So what you heard John Bacon say basically is that he really disagrees with that analysis. He said he thinks that LRSD leadership are focused on this system. They need to focus on kids, and that actually ESTEM represents the population demographics of the city and is doing a great job. You know, the state board took over the Little Rock School District last year, and that was because of the 6 schools in academic distress, disbanded the local school board. And now that these schools are in distress, you know, Adams's argument is that the state has made itself responsible for their success. And he was saying, he wrote them a letter and he said, you know, he wanted them, the state board, to look at the big picture and think about, well, if we move these kids over to the charter schools, like, what will be the result? And to, you know, think about the LRSD, what will happen?
To me, the state board, you know, they have taken over the Little Rock School District, and they are the accountability group for the charter schools. So they really own all the public education that's happening in Little Rock. And so to me, it's their responsibility to look at the whole picture.
And Chris, you spoke with the head of LISA Academy Friday morning for a reaction.
Yeah, and basically she said that, you know, there's been a robust debate about this, and it basically proves that people in Little Rock care about the education of their kids, and, you know, whether or not they're on one side or the other. I mean, obviously, it's disappointing to the side who's more in favor of a robust public education system for the Little Rock School District. It's difficult to see a good path forward for them. Although, I mean, it may prove that this debate has some lingering effects, which is that, you know, people will continue to talk about this issue. There's also this issue of, well, if these 3,000 kids who might be enrolled in LISA and eSTEM come from the Little Rock School District, the Little Rock School District may lose a significant chunk of its pure pupil state funding, which, given the financial situation of the district, may make it more difficult for it to kind of improve some of its facilities and do some things like engage in some projects in the upcoming years, especially with the loss of desegregation funding from the state as well.
Thanks, Chris. That's really the crux of the issue, why the population shift matters. And the Little Rock School District has launched this effort to build a new middle school in West Little Rock. And the whole goal was to recruit and inspire people to come back into the city and into the district. So now that's their plan. They wanted to start with that school and move through the others to do improvements. And I think they're faced with this challenge of this new loss, potential loss of population.
Yeah, I mean, I think the eSTEM and LISA would argue that, or they have argued that, you know, really this loss is, you know, minimal, at least with LISA Academy's principal, Lou Ann Baroni, who I spoke with. She basically said, you know, we're just getting 600 students, new seats. Really, that's not much of an impact. But, you know, others on the other side of this issue would argue that, you know, that's still a significant chunk, you know.
And I'm sure the business community that supports the charter school expansion might say bringing people back to Little Rock, improving any schools, will help all the schools because people will want to move here.
All right. Well, with that, we'll wrap up this week's podcast. I'm Michael Heplin.
I'm Sarah Weitz-Kotajek.
I'm Chris Hickey.
Thank you for listening this week. Our theme song is by our own Chris Hickey. KUAR is a listener-supported, editorially independent service of the University of Arkansas at Little Rock. If you're not already a subscriber, you can subscribe to the podcast and hear it each week on iTunes.